Welcome to Bi Plus, podcasting for the Bi Plus universe. I'm Elizabeth Meacham. Today, we welcome Kylie Madoff, Senior Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at SAGE. We'll be discussing the National Resource Center on LGBTQ plus aging, which is a project of SAGE. Welcome, Kylie. And could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and also about SAGE and what SAGE does?
Absolutely. Well, welcome to all the listeners of the show. My name is Kylie Madoff. I use she and her pronouns. I am the Senior Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at SAGE, and I'm currently based in New York City, though SAGE is a nationwide organization. SAGE is actually the world's largest and oldest organization that is specifically dedicated to improving the lives of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer older people across the country. And we're also beginning to partner with different entities around the world as well. So there's a lot of really exciting growth happening at SAGE currently, but we were founded in 1978 in New York City, and we've primarily operated out of our New York kind of nucleus ever since then. But over the next coming years, we will be expanding our footprint across the country. And our dedication to improving the lives of LGBT older adults really is quite multifaceted. We have a portion that's dedicated to healthcare. There's a direct service component to our work as well. And we also have a really important advocacy arm, both at the state, i.e. New York state level, and the national level, which is based out of DC, pushing for greater inclusion and protections for LGBTQ plus elders in the United States.
Awesome. What does SAGE stand for?
SAGE stands for Services and Advocacy for, I believe the acronym was GLBT at the time, elders.
Okay. I think it's probably GLBT because if you put LGBT, it would be sale.
which brings up a whole lot of
different. Not go so
right. Well. Different connotations. It's a very different flavor.
I would put the G
of nomenclature.
Yeah. I mean, you put the B, it's SABE, and that's not as cool as SAGE. Yeah. Anyway, I get it.
Though I think SABE, I mean, like for me, it brings up kind of saber-tooth tiger, which I don't know, it's kind of like a cool image, right? Save saber
cool.
too.
We'll have to start another group just for fun, and you know,
yes.
We don't have to do anything just so we can take the name saber-tooth. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, how did you find, because you kind of have an interesting, when I read your bio, you have an interesting history in queer work as well.
Yes.
Community work. And how did you find your way to SAGE? What attracted you about it too?
Absolutely. So I think there are many aspects of SAGE as an organization that attracted me. I think for me, I'll fill in kind of your viewership on my trajectory as well. I've spent most of my career working within the nonprofit space in New York City, specifically focused on LGBTQ plus populations. I've done this in New York City. I've also done some work in the Caribbean and India as well. But I think for me, and I've been very fortunate. I've been able to work with the LGBTQ plus community across different kind of groups. So I've worked a lot with immigrant populations, specifically asylum seekers and refugees who happen to be LGBTQ plus. I've also worked with youth as well, like LGBTQ plus youth. And adults. But I think for me, what really attracted me to SAGE was the opportunity to work specifically with older adults in a similar capacity, because I think for me it was rather a personal kind of goal, as it were. I'm very cognizant that the life that I live as a queer person in 2023 was made possible by truly unfathomable, tremendous sacrifices that were made by previous generations of LGBTQ plus people in New York City and across the country and really around the world, right? So like a lot of the conveniences and protections that I have leveraged, right, to get to where I've been able to get to in my personal and professional lives are because of the sacrifices of previous generations. And so I think for me, one of the primary motivators for pursuing this opportunity at SAGE was to be able to give back to a community or to a part of the community that really paved the way for all of us, right? For all of us who were alive and who identify as being a member of the LGBTQ plus kind of spectrum, right? Like, I just wanted to give back, honestly, quite frankly, and And I think, and also like apply the skills that I learned along the way in a role that made sense for me. And the stars aligned and say, and there was an opening at Sage around the time that I was looking to pivot. And so, well, I applied and I suppose the rest is history.
I was just impressed by your bio because it really says a lot about an organization when they hire somebody with all those credentials like you have. That's passionate. You've got a history in queer advocacy. You speak like four different languages. You've worked in the immigrant community and in the community at large, in the queer community, definitely. So you're this really brilliant person because you're working on your fifth language, correct?
This is correct. I'm married to someone. My husband is from South India, specifically from the state of Tamil Nadu. And so his native language is Tamil, and that is the native language of pretty much all my in-laws. And so I've been really focused. Very much, yes. I mean,
you want to know when they're talking about you, right? You know, I want to know what's being said.
I am a bit of an eavesdropper, like I admit, and so that is part of the motivation, but it's also just like I lived in Chennai previously, especially during COVID when we were able to work remotely. I was living there for half a year and did some work with a queer community on the ground there, and speaking the local language goes a long way. Yes. So that's
just impressed the background because it's you know, when you're learning languages, you learn cultures too. So it's like you're taking anthropology and a language at the same time. I mean, if it's a good something, but you're just really about people. And I mean, just from reading your bio, I could tell this is a person who's really intellectual, but is also very social because you don't get to talk to all those languages without talking to somebody. But you know, just somebody who can reach out and is, I just was impressed that they put you where they put you. To me, that's a sign of a great organization or a healthy organization is that they're utilizing you to their full benefit. So the National Resource Center on LGBTQ plus aging is a project of SAGE.
Correct.
So how does that work out? Like, how is it a project, I guess? Because SAGE also, I mean, that's all you guys do is aging.
Yes.
How does that work out? You know, what does it do and how did the project come about?
Absolutely. So the National Resource Center was established in 2010 through a federal grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And the National Resource Center at SAGE, as we've designed it, provides training, technical assistance, and educational resources to aging providers, LGBTQ plus organizations, and LGBTQ plus elders themselves. So the way that we think of the National Resource Center, which we refer to internally as the NRC, so I'll use that acronym if that's okay.
That is fine just, with me, yes.
Yeah, just for brevity. And also it has an R and an L, so there's the tongue, there's always the potential getting tongue-tied in the term. Yep. But the National Resource Center, or the NRC, is the country's first and only technical assistance resource center focused on improving the quality of services and supports offered to LGBTQ plus older adults, their families, and caregivers. And so some of the thinking behind why the NRC was created is because, so again, SAGE is a very much like, how do I say, they're very much focused on wraparound services or creating an ecosystem where the well-being of older adults isn't reliant on engaging with just kind of like one actor or one group, if that makes sense, right? So we do provide direct services to older adults, but we understand that as with any elder, right? Like LGBTQ plus elders interact with other systems and other people in their lives. And so, yes, we are focused on direct services to our target populations, but we also want to make sure that we're reaching people who might reach other members of the LGBTQ plus older adult community as well. And so that's where I think that the NRC comes in, because it provides those resources, not just for LGBTQ plus elders, but also for people who might interact with them, who might provide care for them as well.
Well, that leads me to my next question. What kind of resources are available through the NRC?
Absolutely. So primarily training, that is a big component of the NRC. There's also technical assistance in terms of people who might be looking to revamp a certain program at their organization that they're offering that targets LGBTQ plus older adults, educational resources. And so those dovetail with our training program, but a lot of that is research articles, kind of like a one-stop shop for people
Yeah,
who
there's a
might have
library,
questions.
online library there, I noticed. Yeah.
Truly, yes.
Yeah.
It's if not fully exhaustive, it is incredibly detailed, right? It's
Yeah.
incredibly inclusive, and so that's there for people who might have questions or who might be doing research in a given area. And these are open. These are geared towards aging providers, but also families and also people who are in the community themselves.
I love that you include the families.
Yes.
And
Yes.
actually my father's in a what do you call them? He doesn't like to call it a home, and I don't either. None of it. We all decided we're not calling it a home. It's a retirement community is the
Yes.
proper term. We just moved him in there about a year and a half ago now. And I don't think we knew how traumatic it was going to be for us and for him, but especially for him. And I really wish I had looked up resources before I did. And then I find out, on top of that, I found out, boy, these are like the, this is, it's like high school there. I'm not kidding. With the dating, it's like a soap opera. And it's just, wow. So I'm going into this community to visit him, and I realize, yeah, it is like that. And it's just like high school when they went, which means I know there's queer people there. Look, we're everywhere. I mean, people are everywhere.
Everywhere. Yes.
But I'm like, I had heard that there's a lot of challenges, and I'll get into that in a second. But I just noticed, if I were here and I was as a bisexual person, an elder bisexual person by myself, I don't think I'd be comfortable being out there, or even talking to people about it, because you get this very much conservative vibe there. And
Yes.
because those people are in their 70s and 80s, and
Right.
it's like being dropped back in time, to that social era of the,
Right.
50s and 60s. So that got me thinking, this kind of leads into my next question about what do you think the biggest challenges are facing the elder community today? And I'm also over 50, so I know this is where I'm heading. But anyway, eventually myself. And so I kind of wanted to get into that. What are the biggest challenges for elders today in our community?
Absolutely. Well, and I also just of your audience, like I'd like to just kind of like second the situation that you kind of described at where your father is residing in terms of the level of conservatism and, how comfortable might one feel being out there. And I think that that truly is a major challenge faced by many members of the community who do reside in residential care facilities, right? Because and I think that's almost something that goes under the radar for most people, I would say, because we've seen how much the country as a whole has progressed over the last few decades, like when it comes to various civil rights issues specific to the LGBTQ plus community, right? So I think and especially with younger generations, right? So I think it's easy to assume, oh well, like look at Gen Z coming up, for example, and see how open they are. The battle is won. Like, folks are, it's
And
a
that's
Shangri-La
ignoring that there
now.
is an elder, even when we do that, we ignore there is an elder population on top of
Well,
that,
exactly. Well,
especially with the queer
exactly.
community.
Precisely. Is that right? So like, and there are very different challenges. And so I would say that finding supportive care environments, and I'm using care environment rather broadly in this particular sentence, because care can be in a residential facility, a facility like you were describing. It can also be at home, right? It can also be the neighborhood. So to answer your question more directly, I would say that one of the major challenges facing LGBTQ plus elders is isolation, right? Because on average, LGBTQ plus elders are less likely to have had children, right? So that means that they might not have the kind of built-in support networks that other members of our society might, right? So that's a huge thing. And then because of that, right, there's often not someone who is affirming of their identity, who can act on their behalf in situations mm-hmm. like where it matters, right? Like hospital stays, hospice care stays, like residential facilities, right? There might not be someone like a spouse, right? Because again, like yeah. lower levels of marriage, like particularly for like older generations who were adults prior to 2016, right?
Yeah.
You know, who were a marrying age prior to 2016, are less likely to be married now. And yeah. so that just has massive implications. So isolation, lack of kind of like affirming support networks is a major thing. Built into that is also like higher levels of poverty, right? Like we've seen we observe higher levels of poverty among LGBTQ plus older adults, like among like the population as a whole, which as we know pertains to housing discrimination, yeah. like kind of compounded throughout the lifetime. Employment discrimination, again, compounded throughout the lifetime. So that means less savings. Post-retirement, if there are any savings to speak of, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so just kind of like, all of the stressors and kind of pressures that we're quite familiar with in terms of challenges for the LGBTQ plus community, you have to kind of like extrapolate that out, you know, 3 or 4 decades, right? And then
yeah.
post-retirement, right? You know, these years, these decades that might've been spent building a nest egg or building a community because of the laws of where people lived in this country, those lives weren't always possible to build.
Yeah.
And so those I would say are some of the major challenges.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I have myself in my, I've got, there's myself and then 9 siblings. So there's 10 of us. And my older sister and I are the ones who advocate for my dad at that facility and my brother to some degree. But I you think about it, these people have nobody advocating for them. If they didn't have right. children or they've outlived everybody in their family, which is not usually the case. Usually elder people have had children of that generation anyway.
Right.
Yeah. But the whole baby boom thing. But yeah, I mean, these are people. So are they open to more abuse and like exploitation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we actually estimated, say, it's at 60% of LGBTQ plus elders report fear being mistreated, refused care, or in danger of neglect or abuse in senior living communities just because of their identity. And so yeah. this is something that is demonstrably provable. And that's also a huge thing too, right? Because as you said, there's often kind of like an air of conservatism that is quite yeah. pervasive in these spaces. And so abuse is absolutely yeah. like
and
a risk
stuff
factor.
Happens with my dad. We're there to gripe about it. We can call people up. My sister, we call her Karen. So, hey, you know, sometimes you need a Karen, and that's when you pour yeah. out is when the, you know, father's being abused in the thing, you know,
yes.
he calls and starts threatening, I want to see the manager type stuff. No,
absolutely.
But like, you know, we'll advocate and say, no, this yes. is how it's supposed to be. There's nobody right. doing that.
And having that advocate is so important, right?
Yeah.
And these are things that I don't think that many policies in the states kind of currently account for, is that not everyone is going to have, right?
Right.
You know, a child or spouse to advocate on their behalf when they're in these facilities. And yeah. the government, right, there's not like a robust mechanism quite for addressing that. And as I'm sure that you're well aware, that we saw so much of this come to be put in stark relief during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like in the US and in Canada with the crisis of care at residential facilities. And so, yes, having an advocate is so important. That's just something that many LGBTQ plus older adults do not have access to.
Yeah. Yeah. So how are you handling that with training people in these facilities? There's such a high turnover. Has that been a problem for you all?
So turnover is it is definitely, I think, an aggravating factor like for the challenges that we've described. Mm-hmm. But this is why Sage also offers kind of like more than kind of like one-off trainings, right?
Yeah.
So we do offer one-off trainings, yes, like if that's what's desired, but we're really looking to build relationships with these facilities, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Okay. so our care management team or the team that manages the National Resource Center, they really do spend a lot of their working hours, cultivating working partnerships with the facilities that they work with. So yes, if an organization only wants to engage once, that's obviously their right. And we have resources that we can kind of send their way.
Once is better than nothing, right?
Yeah. Once is better than nothing, but
you prefer a long-term.
We prefer like a long-term thing, just so we can kind of like get ahead of the turnover question.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes more sense, because then if you have that relationship, they'll hire people that are already or interested in LGBTQ plus issues.
Absolutely.
There's so much out there. How about home care? You do stuff for caregivers at home, don't you? Or people who work with people at home.
We absolutely do. That is a major prong of the NRC's work as well. I suppose home help attendants, providing them with training, best practice guidelines as well, because they are a major segment of kind of like the caring population for many LGBTQ, like older plus adults that can't afford to live in residential facilities, which, as we know, as I'm sure that you're like well aware, can be exorbitantly expensive out of the budget for most people. Yes.
And don't depend on the VA, by the way. That was our mistake. We thought that, government would help. Start saving up. Yeah, this is, I'm getting up there and I'm starting to think, oh, I need to start saving up for this stuff. But are there like homes that are specific, or communities that are specific to LGBTQ people? Do you know?
And I'm sorry, like residential facilities that are
home. Yeah, no. residential facilities that are specifically catered to that our population, our community.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, sort of like not to kind of like tout Sage's like accomplishments, but Sage does offer. So these are not residential facilities kind of in the traditional sense of having kind of like on-site 24-hour medical care, but we do offer we do have two residences in New York City, two buildings that are geared, that are designed for the LGBTQ plus older adult population. And so Sage does, but I think that you're asking about kind of like more traditional like residential care, long-term facilities that are well known. And so those I actually would need to check in on. I'm not immediately aware of any that are like forwardly kind of like specifically for the LGBTQ plus community, but I'll check on that for you.
I'm just curious. And that would be a new thing, I'm sure. I mean, this is just stuff we're thinking about, because I don't know what happened. Everybody woke up in 2016. I know what happened. You all know what happened. But we're just starting to think about, you know what? LGBTQ people are living older and we're getting there. And you turn 50. I turned 50, and boy, everybody seems to notice. I didn't think I looked different the next day, but even before I turned 50, if you're older, you kind of, everybody thinks of queer as usually gay white men, and they're young in their 20s or 30s,
absolutely.
And so it just hasn't even been in the mindset of our own community at all. But now the baby boomers are getting older, and there's a lot of them.
Right.
And we're living into our 80s and 90s.
Correct. And I was going to say that I think that you're speaking to something that is part of why we advocate so kind of tenaciously on behalf of LGBTQ plus elders, is because we want to not only raise awareness around the challenges that they face, but around their existence, right? Because as you said, I think that like many people across the country have an image, like when they hear LGBT, they think, as you said, of kind of like perhaps white gay men, perhaps of somebody younger. But I, we often speak of LGBTQ communities as if they're separate from other communities, right? So LGBTQ or the Black community, or LGBTQ or the elder community. But as you just beautifully laid out, they are one and the same, right? They are LGBTQ plus members of all communities across the country. But because of, I think, the level of silence that surrounded speaking about LGBTQ plus kind of issues in an affirmative way for decades, for centuries, I think that we're only just now nuancing our conversation around what it means to be queer or LGBTQ plus, and who might identify as such. And there are as you said, millions upon millions of baby boomers and older adults who are proudly LGBTQ plus, and it's a question of raising their profile so that there's not right. So I think it's harder to silo entire like swathes like of the population if we realize how integrated we all are in terms of identity.
Yeah, and we're not all white men. Sorry, we're not
this
all white.
Very accurate. Men. Correct.
We're elder LGBTQ. We're here. We're still here. And we're queer. Yeah,
always been here.
But you know, it's just and there's some ageism within our own community, and I think that's contributed to that. And younger white men have been, gay men have been centered on this discussion. What does the center offer caretakers of LGBTQ people? So people who are living with LGBTQ, or in like, if my dad were queer, what kind of services would you offer me? He really makes a point of dating every woman in the place. So we know, Dad, we get it, you're straight. But anyway, oh my gosh. Oh, anyway, but if my father were, if I had a relative who was queer in a retirement community, or that I was taking care of in my home, or somehow engaged, what kind of services or resources are offered by the NRC?
Absolutely. So very similar kind of training programs, obviously kind of like tailored to the experiences and to the competencies of home health aides. But we typically don't work with, or we're not opposed to it, obviously, but in terms of capacity, we typically work with the agencies that employ home health attendance, like as it were. But I'm sorry, like, what are you asking, like about like home health aides who work for an agency, or people who are more like informal caretakers
as it were? Both.
Okay.
But informal caretakers too, you know, I mean, I felt totally out of touch with my dad in things about finding a retirement community for him,
correct,
or especially that in what you need to know about how to advocate for your relative or your elder types of things. So I could see it on both levels, like caretaker level. Well, you already know they're already engaged into the caretaking system, but there's a lot of us who aren't.
Well, I would say, honestly, I think that for caretakers like yourself, who might not be kind of plugged into formal agencies, as it were, so all the aforementioned like resources are there. But one thing that we find that is especially useful for caretakers who are not, as it were, professional caretakers, but who are nonetheless very much engaged in caretaking for their family members or parents, is that we curate a list of LGBTQ plus kind of what we agencies that we've worked with or that we've researched that we can independently verify as being LGBTQ plus affirming, right? So we have like a curated kind of like list, but it's like a very like important and like useful list, right? And it's not just in one state, right? It's across the country of agencies and that we've worked with that have either gone through our training and have demonstrated their kind of like that they understand the kind of like core competencies of LGBTQ plus affirmative care, or that we have independently verified via research, via kind of like our conversations with staff at these agencies.
So you add them to your directory when they train with you.
Correct. Yeah. And we do indicate that so like so there's a directory, yes, yeah. And then we vouched for the people who were there. Like we wouldn't include kind of like a link or a referral to an agency that we have not verified is actually an affirming place for LGBTQ plus seniors.
Okay. Do you guys ever check back up on them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like,
oh,
like
nice.
That is part of, yes, that's part of the vetting process. And so like, as I was mentioning, we are very, like very much about creating and cultivating relationships. And so, you know, just because like an agency might have garnered a certain kind of certification from SAGE 5 years in the past, you know, we do check up periodically to kind of see like where they are. And if indeed they're maintaining, you know, yeah, the level of care, the competencies that are required to kind of sustain that certification.
That's nice. Yeah, because you know those places change hands all the time. You know,
for sure, staff come and go.
Yeah, and they get owned by different people. Like it bought out and owned. It's just like funeral homes. It's nuts. But Yeah, so it's nice that you're checking back. I think that would make me feel better as a caretaker and as an elder, to know that I could believe, that I can believe that you guys have been doing that, or that it's still the same. So, or yeah, that's cool. Any more you want to add on to that?
I think that gives like a pretty like comprehensive high-level overview of the NRC, as it were.
Yeah.
But as I was mentioning, the NRC is just but one team under the SAGE umbrella, in terms of care for the for LGBTQ plus elders across the country. So that's a very important arm. But SAGE like really is, I call it in my own kind of personal parlance, a one-stop shop for
Yeah.
LGBTQ plus older adult wellness, as it were. And so the NRC is one component of that, but there's much, much more that falls under the SAGE umbrella. I mean, it can be overwhelming for sure,
It is.
for residents and for caretakers like alike. And actually, kind of just like one other thing that I did like want to kind of plug, like about the NRC, is that we also offer an LGBTQ plus like aging national hotline, that anyone can call, who might be experiencing isolation. But and so and by anyone, I mean caregivers, I mean people who
Yeah.
are actually LGBT plus elders who are in situations that are uncomfortable. But that is a hotline that we that SAGE set up and that exists under the NRC. And that, yes, and that is another avenue of support for people who just need a place, just need somewhere to vent to reach out to report something that's
And
perhaps
that's on the website, right?
That is on the website, and I'm happy to
Okay.
share as well with
I'll list
link.
it in our show notes, definitely. But go ahead and share it. Real quickly, what the number is.
All right, so the number I have it pulled up here is 877-360-LGBT, easy to remember, which is 877-360-5428. And that is the SAGE National LGBTQ plus Elder Hotline. And this and again, like, this is primarily geared towards people who are caregivers or who are members of the LGBTQ plus older adult community. And on the other end of that line, there is guaranteed to be a friendly responder who will be there to provide information, answer questions factually and confidentiality. We have responders on the other line who are certified in crisis response, who are able to offer support without any sort of judgment about what a person might be experiencing, and to provide information about community support resources such as healthcare, transportation, counseling, legal services, and emotional support services that are available in a given geography. And
Offering
also,
that
this is
phone number.
available in English and Spanish, and we can offer translation in 180 languages as
Oh
well.
my
So
goodness.
speaking English is not, or not speaking English fluently is not a barrier. We're open to all.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So, where can we find out more about the center and Sage?
To learn more, I would recommend that anyone listening who might be seeking more information visit sageusa.org. That is our overarching website, and under there you can find information about truly all of SAGE's ventures, all of SAGE's teams, and this includes, of course, our National Resource Center. So if you start out at sageusa.org, I would say that is where you will find all the information pertaining to the various areas of our work that we've touched on today. So in addition to visiting sageusa.org for more information, listeners can also visit lgbtagingcenter.org for more information specifically about the National Resource Center.
Is there anything else you can think of that you might like to put out there?
I would just say that as we've engaged like in this conversation, like I really do encourage listeners of the podcast to kind of just like keep in mind, right, that the issues that we speak of with the LGBTQ plus community, right, in terms of the discrimination, like in terms of the social isolation and things of that nature, are truly magnified, can be
Yes.
magnified for LGBTQ plus elders, right? And so, because I think it's just something that we don't always think about, because we being the kind of like folks who are perhaps like not engaged in the care ecosystem, like just assume, oh well, there's an abundance of care options. The country has advanced like pretty substantially over the last 30 years on these civil rights questions, and so therefore, like things are fine. Like things are as good as like they can be. And you
No,
know,
they're not.
yes, progress and yes, the forward like momentum, but we have a lot of work to do, right? Like 21% of LGBTQ plus like adults have provided care to friends, right? So we're like a lot of the care that doesn't a lot of the avenues of care that don't exist for LGBTQ plus older adults actually comes from other members of the community who also might be experiencing their own forms of discrimination, right? So we have to think that there's immense strain being put on not only LGBTQ plus older adults, but their caregivers who themselves, based on their identities, might not have access to, right, to as many avenues of gainful employment, to resources in general, to savings. And so this is truly a nationwide question, right? Like we're focused on healthcare, of course, for LGBTQ plus elders, but that involves truly every segment of society, I would argue. And that's just something that I, in my capacity at Sage, like would encourage folks who might hear this to keep in mind that this is about one community, but this one community is, you know, like this is about our entire society.
Yeah. We're everywhere. We really are.
Everywhere.
And we matter. And you know, that's the thing. It's once I turned 50, it's like when I got married and being bisexual, quote unquote, because it does matter, mind you, didn't matter. And now I'm 50, and it's like even my friends who are gay or lesbian or now we're finally feeling that. It's like, oh well, they're just, it's like, it doesn't matter because you're not having sex. And yes we are. But again, it's not about sex, it's about a lot of things. And let me tell you about your grandpa.
You
so
know,
check on your pop.
Yes. I mean, we're all people, right? We all have our like you know, yeah.
Sexuality is more than just about sex.
Yes.
It's just the same. You know, women go through the same thing. Once we turn 50 or 60, nobody wants to think about women being sexual anymore. And but it's like you said, it's magnified if you're queer.
Yes.
All of that
absolutely
is magnified. So
absolutely,
be nice to
absolutely
you. Be nice to us old people.
No, for sure. And I mean, as I said, like we're talking about now the generation, you know, who would have been like many of whom like were engaged kind of like in the civil rights like movement in the 70s and 80s for queer liberation, right? And so like, you know, they paved the way for us. And so, you know, not preaching to anyone like about, you know, how they need to show up, but I think that, you know, there's a strong argument like to be made that, you know, it couldn't hurt to give back a little, as it were.
Well, and you want to make, I mean, people are watching you. If you're not going to take care of your elders, they're not going to take care of you. You know,
there's
we teach the younger generations, and everybody deserves dignity.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah.
Absolutely. And
now
I was
I'm
going to say too,
preaching.
No, but I mean, but this is the place for it, right? This is the place for it.
Well, we've had a great discussion. I've really enjoyed my time with you. This is Kylie Madoff. She is with SAGE, which stands for, again,
Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders.
Thank you. And the NRC, National Resource Center on LGBTQ plus Aging, is a project of SAGE. I'm Elizabeth Meacham. Remember, there's a whole Bi Plus universe ready to embrace you. Reach out and find your community.